Hi there, listener. You're about to experience Tadpog. Tyler and Dave play old games, and there will be plenty of game talk, but also copious amounts of crude, off-color, offensive, and immature speech. So if you are of a rather sensitive humor constitution, we're just letting you know what you're in for with this show. It has games. It has jokes. You know, just games and jokes. Take the games, take the jokes, and have a good time.
Hello, Internet, and welcome to another Tadpog Podcast. It's a show that happens twice a week where two old guys and amazingly still one rather young lady talk about old games, interesting games. It's just games we play. This week, we are talking about the 360 exclusive, right? And PC.
Yeah, I think it came out on the 360 it was out for 360 for a long time, mm-hmm. I think, before it came out for PC.
So, yeah, those platforms, Alan Wake. Mm. And we have special guest hosts who, more recently than Dave and I, played Alan Wake. Mm-hmm. And we'll get our opinions on it. Nicole Nance.
Hey, Nicole.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you played this recently, because I played this a long time ago.
It's fairly recently. I wouldn't say recently.
More recently than
a lot more recently than I did.
I played this when it came out.
Yep.
And then I watched you play the DLC, Dave, in Lexington.
Mm-hmm. And that was years ago. Mm-hmm. So this is technically an old game. So this, I think, is within our realm of Tyler and Dave play old games.
It is now a console generation ago.
Right.
So
we're good. We're in the clear. In fact, we've never talked about a game that is current gen.
You are correct. You are correct, sir.
So there you get you on that.
Yeah, no. I mean, we've talked about recent PC games, but yeah, no current gen consoles.
Yeah, I don't count those because like PC games are kind of nebulous, right? Because there's really no generation for those. I guess unless they come out on a console as well.
But still, yeah, just count. Just count. I am your bearded host, Tyler, and I guess I got a few potential things to talk about.
Okay, what you got?
This part of the show where we want you to feel like you're one of our friends and we're just sitting around and talking about games.
Right.
Oh. So we tell personal information to shame the people that we know in real life, mm-hmm. and let you feel closer to us.
Also, no pressure, but if a lot of people from Dragon Con may be listening to this for like the first time ever, so this might be like everyone's like entry point.
Gotta bring it
to Tadpog.
Gotta bring it.
So not only do we have to bring it, but we, I think that we need to really bring it.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
I think we really like if bringing it is like at a six, we need to crank it up to like a seven.
It's a good thing Josh is over on this couch and not guest hosting. Yeah, because in studio but not recording, mm-hmm. Josh Nance and Kyle Searles, two former guest hosts. Kyle reluctantly so, but still against the former guest host.
Still counts.
I your beard host, Tyler. I'm not really a big drinker. Like typically I might have like I don't like beer. I might have like one drink, one cider, and that's pretty much it for me. But I love it when other people drink. I love drunk people. Mm-hmm. My two favorite drunk people are right here at this table.
Oh, I'm blushing.
Absolute favorite drunks.
Thanks.
But so much so, I remember when we were in Alexandria, when I lived in Alexandria, Virginia, for Meg to go to seminary, that the church basically paid for her, you know, to go and get her master's degree. And in turn, she'd work for the church in that state, you know, for an extended period of time. So they would give us aid in the form of like a check every semester or whatever, mm-hmm. to spend for school and living expenses and stuff like that. And the first time when we got that check, I was like, man, that's a lot of money. I want to make some good friends here in Virginia. So I took $500 out of this check, went to the liquor store. I got a bartending manual and looked up a bunch of drinks that I wanted to go buy and spent $500 on liquor. This did last the entire 3 years I was in seminary, though. So it worked. Or Meg was in seminary and I was there.
So this is the famous wet bar that Tim Bear had mentioned.
Yes.
I was on the show.
Had a computer desk and uh-huh. I moved the computer to a different part of the room and just set up my bar at the where you put the keyboard, had all my mixing supplies in the book, so I pull those out and get my stir sticks and mm-hmm. things like that. And then I had another rack somewhere for my glasses underneath. And
now a stir stick, that's like the tiny red straw, right?
I had plastic ones, but mm-hmm. yeah, like thick plastic ones that were reusable that I would then take out of the drink. But and I spent those 3 years, every time somebody would come over, hey, you want a drink? Well, what are you going to drink? Nothing, but you should drink. So throughout the years, I would throw, of course, trying to get everybody drunk and throwing themed parties for everybody.
Themed parties? Such as?
Well, let's see. Tim Bear's wife, Kirsten, mm-hmm. she had mentioned liking like bubble gum. So I went and bought a bunch of bubble gum flavored vodka and a bunch of mixers and things like that. And I dressed entirely in pink, decorated in pink, and had a bubblegum bar.
Well, that just sounds like an excuse for you to dress in pink.
Pretty much.
I've never seen you in pink.
There's a picture on Facebook. Pink tie, pink shirt. And I made up a menu of like 6 different bubblegum drinks and had it posted up. And then that's what everybody drank the whole night. That went over really, really well. Kirsten is also one of my favorite drunks. I love it when she would drink. But there was always a tipping point where you could tell she's having a great time, and then she starts crying. Then it's like, okay, now the party's done.
See, I do the same thing, except instead of crying, I just throw up everywhere. So.
And then for another friend, she loved chocolate. So I did the same thing for her, dressed in brown, had different kind of chocolate, and made a big chocolate drink bar. So not a lot of guys really wanted like themed
That's what I was about to ask. What'd you do for all your guy friends?
I had a James Livingston ordered me some milk vodka.
This is a gentleman whose television you did not like.
Yes.
Right.
Well, I liked because it was shitty.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry. You're right.
And he bought me a special vodka distilled from milk, and I had a white Russian party with it one time. But yeah, I like getting people drunk. I never drink. I'm always the designated driver, but it's always a good time. That's what I like to do.
It's true. We need designated drivers. Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. Always need designated drivers.
So you're talking about how badly we need to bring it. And I was like, well, this is just an anecdote and less of a funny story.
What's up, Internet? I'm Dave. I'm your bespectacled host. And Nicole, you may be able to relate unless you don't want to talk about this. I don't know why you wouldn't. But I just recently was bitten by a spider. Twice. Oh. And I say that because you were not too long ago bitten by like a black widow, is that right?
Right, yeah.
I don't know what kind of spider this was, but here's my story. And the part that's, I think, most interesting is it has nothing to do with the spider bite itself. I woke up at like 1:30 in the morning and my ankle was all swollen and I noticed these two red dots. And the first thing I thought was what everyone's thinking right now, ankle vampire. Definitely.
Banicula.
Definitely. Banicula was in my house. So I was like, what the hell is this? And like, I ran my fingers over it and like skin just came off. And like, not like a whole lot of skin. Just like a leprosy amount of skin.
Yeah. But
like, enough to be like, I need to maybe go to the doctor tomorrow morning. It's like, I don't know. There's a certain amount of skin where it's like, you definitely need to go to the emergency room. And then there's an amount of skin where it's like, this can wait 6 hours. This was the wait 6 hours kind of skin. So I went into the doctor and I wait. Well, this is actually, I'm not fancy. It wasn't a doctor. It was a walk-in clinic. Let's be honest. And pay my $25. I'm like, all right, let's have a look at my my spider bites. And so I'm sitting in the waiting room. She comes in and she says, okay, show me the bites. And I pulled my sock down and she's like, okay. And like, she looked at me and she said, do you live in a house?
That's the degree of the clinic.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like,
she was asking you if you were homeless.
See, that's what I took it as. Cause I kind of looked at her like, yeah.
What were you wearing when you went into the,
I was wearing, well, I was shirtless. I was shirtless, and you know I've got that really, really dark tan.
And you put on your Walmart bag shoes.
Yeah. And no, I was wearing what I'm wearing now, which is like my sleeves are rolled up. It's not a fancy shirt or anything, but probably not a homeless man's shirt.
I don't think so, no.
And I've showered that morning and everything. So I don't know. Honestly, she might have been trying to make me forget about the spider bite because that's like I left and that's all I could think about was, did she think I was homeless? Really?
So she didn't elaborate at all after you said that?
Like, no. She just went on right to the next question. She's like, do you work outside? I don't know. Crazy. I was like, no, she said, are you outside a lot? And I was like, yeah, I guess I could walk to my car. Like, I do go outside. So that's it. Updates to follow on the spider bite situation. She said, this was comforting, by the way. When she said, oh, there's spider bites. I was like, okay. She's like, they're going to get worse. Like, that's going to get worse. That whole situation on your ankle, definitely going to get worse.
Did she gave you medicine, right?
She gave me some antibiotic topical cream. Mm-hmm. And she said, when and if it changes color or like stripes begin to appear, like in your veins, she said, fill this prescription.
Too late.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's I want you to go to a real doctor.
I want you to go to a real doctor because when I went to my doctor, I got 5 prescriptions.
Yeah.
So.
But you got bit by a black widow.
Well, I mean, she didn't give me all those questions either. I was like, here's my spider bite. She kind of poked around a little bit. She's like, yeah, that's infected. She gave me.
Oh, it was infected. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, see, this is not infected. She did say if it abscesses, it's a definitely, definitely, definitely.
I think that's what happened. Mine was like an open wound and it just got bigger and bigger. And then it got warm to the touch and it got hard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to go to the doctor about this one.
Oh, see, I went immediately because it was like I went 6 hours after it happened because I've never been bit by a spider. I'm not like afraid of spiders, but I'm not messing around with a spider bite. I was like, this is a spider bite. I'm going to the doctor quote unquote, the doctor.
Because the way you talked about it, was just like, do you live in a house? Well, here's some mercury. I'd like you to take these mercury tests.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Great, okay. Do you have a lawyer? No, you don't? Okay, great. Well, take more of these mercury.
Here are the ashes of a priest. Rub this into it periodically.
Mm-hmm. Have you eaten any kind of animal pancreas recently? You may want to try that.
And don't forget prayer. You should probably try prayer.
Prayer?
Yes.
Well, there's plenty of that. There's plenty of that where we live. There's enough. There's way enough.
You just go outside and get some. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You got better.
I got better.
Good.
Yeah. My leg did not fall off, which was my concern. Like, I had heard other people tell stories about getting spider bites and, like, losing chunks of flesh. So.
Yeah. I hear that, like, those, like, brown recluse stories are, like, overly exaggerated. Like, that's, like, super, super rare.
Well, see, what I read in my research is that brown recluse are a lot worse and a lot more deadly than black widows.
Yeah.
Because they're so aggressive, people get bit by them lots. So black widows can be deadly, but it doesn't happen like brown recluse.
I assume that this was a brown recluse because I was just sleeping. Mm. I was just sleeping and it just bit me. So.
Maybe you should get your house checked.
Nah, it's fine. It's fine.
I guess it's my turn.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to lead into it? Because I say I'm your bearded host, Tyler. You can say you're our rather young lady host, Nicole.
I'm your rather young lady, Nicole.
There you go.
And
There you go, Blake. You're welcome.
I'm your rather young lady.
Sultry. Josh perked up on the couch.
I guess for my story, Tyler had asked me before we started recording if what the most trouble I'd ever gotten in school was. And I got one day of alternative school in high school.
This blows my mind. I can't believe that I am friends with an alternative school kid.
A lawful, neutral, alternative school kid. That's a bad combination.
I can't believe it.
It wasn't. I mean, I feel like I don't feel like it was warranted. I feel like they wanted to make an example of me because I wasn't normally in trouble. So they wanted to be like, see, look, we punished those other people too.
You volunteered as tribute?
Yeah, I got a day of alternative school because I flipped off a school bus full of people as it drove by.
Why?
I don't know. I don't remember, to be honest.
How old were you?
I was in high school. So.
Okay.
So you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah.
So you were just mad at authority?
Or school buses?
I don't think so. I think like one of my other friends was on the school bus.
Like, fuck you, bitch. Love you, bitches.
No, that's not quite.
that's just how you sound. Uh-huh. Love you, bitches.
It's not that bad, though. Alternative school.
What did you do? I've always wondered what you do.
At the beginning of the day, they come in. They bring you your stack of assignments for the day.
Like, is this from your regular class?
From your regular classes, okay. Your stack of assignments for the day. And I loved it because I blew through all those assignments in, like, the first 2 hours, and I spent the rest of the time reading a novel.
So did I. I had 3 days in A school.
I can't believe I'm just surrounded by alternative school kids. I don't know if I can continue this. Do you live in a house? Do either of you live in a house?
Mm-hmm. Spider covens. No, because the A school, but school hadn't started yet. I got Hardee's on the way into school. When I pulled in, I was like, oh man, I really want some cinnamon rolls from Hardee's. So I left again to get cinnamon rolls, and I came back. The administrator had seen me leave. I'd come onto school grounds and then left again without permission, even though school hadn't even started yet.
That is so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three days of A school.
Detention, maybe.
3 days?
3 days.
Even detention? I think even detention's bullshit. School hadn't started.
Well, I got to read the Green Mile. So. Jacob got a few days for putting a magnet on top of a monitor.
Oh, well, that's destructive behavior. I get that.
Well, he didn't know what he was doing. He was like, "Oh, hey, it looks funny when I do this." That was it. No willful intent.
Sure, Jacob. Sure, I don't buy it.
Since you talked about being homeless, also I've got.
Yeah.
You have a homeless story.
Well, my dad. If my dad's going to church or going to work, he'll dress up. Otherwise, he wears the same stuff he does, like paint cars, old ratty jeans he's had forever, and like stretched out dirty white T-shirts, and. He was supposed to go meet a guy to look at his car because he, you know, flips cars. So he went into
he's a stuntman.
He went in. Yeah. He went into a place that he thought was the address where he was supposed to meet this guy. But he walks in and there are a bunch of people there. And as soon as he walks in the door, some guy comes up to him and puts his arm around him and says, "Hey, man, I'm really glad to see you. How are you doing today?" My dad was, "I'm okay, man. How are you feeling? You feeling good?" "Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good." "Good, good. Why don't you? I'd like to spend some time with you." Okay, and he leads my dad over to a table. Have you anything to eat today? And dad, he just got up and had like peanut butter toast, and then went into work. He's like, "No, I had like some toast earlier." He's like, "Oh no, man, you need to eat more than that." And he goes and gets dad like a big bowl of soup and a sandwich and a roll and a big drink. And he sits across from him and he talks to dad. And dad just starts eating the soup and he's talking to the guy. And he looks around and he realizes he's in a homeless soup kitchen. And the guy, because of the way he was dressed, thought dad was homeless, gave him a meal and had a conversation with him. So he realized what it was, but finished his soup and said thank you and left.
Life pro tip. Want some free soup? I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
I can't believe that he ate it. Like, he didn't know where he was or who this person was. He gave him food. He just ate it.
Yeah. That's my dad. Never meant to turn down free homeless people's soup.
Is that soup made of homeless people? Yeah. Probably.
It was a Soylent homeless shelter.
It's like that Twilight Zone episode.
All right, so Alan Wake.
That's a name of a person.
It is.
But not a typical video game name.
No, it's not.
You normally don't name a video game a person name. It's kind of like naming your pet a person name.
I'm trying to think of any other games that were named directly after people like that and not like somebody and then like King Griffey Baseball or nothing like that. But like we're a person's name just as the title.
We'll think of something like days after we publish
this. We'll let you guys know next month, or Tony will let us know next time. Which I guess we should also give a shout out to Blake, Oldbaker Blake Woods, and Impresario Tony. They had babies.
They did it. You guys did it.
Tony had one today, and Blake had one yesterday.
Pretty cool. Do you think it was a race?
I guess. I liked it. Blake's pretty competitive.
Yeah.
And Tony likes to know stuff and be right, so I think so. I think they were both.
So wait, Blake, he had his baby yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did our fantasy football draft yesterday. I don't, but
yeah.
But he had his baby yesterday.
He had the baby and then did the draft on the phone in the hospital room.
Oh, okay.
Dedication.
Yeah. Any chance we can get his wife on the show?
In a few days. We can call, that'd be pretty funny to call his wife. Like, how'd you feel about him doing that draft?
Did she know?
I bet she doesn't even know. Yeah. He did the draft. do you hear that, Dave?
No.
You hear that?
No, I don't.
I don't either, because light doesn't make a sound, but I think it has to be light and dark.
I hear a click clack, a click clack. Sounds like a typewriter.
Like a
typewriter train, go. Maybe.
You went the logical route, sound of a typewriter, and I was like the sound of light coming out of a flashlight.
Do you hear that? The sound of a man's deep, deep sorrow. I do hear. I think that's ushering in a segment that we here on the show like to call Dave Reads from Wikipedia. Mm. Okay, guys. Alan Wake is a survival horror video game developed by Remedy Entertainment and published by Microsoft Game Studios. It was released for the Xbox 360 and Microsoft Windows. The story follows best-selling thriller novelist Alan Wake as he tries to uncover the mystery behind his wife's disappearance during a vacation in the small fictional town of Bright Falls. That's in Washington, by the way, in case anyone was curious. This happens all while experiencing events from the plot in his latest novel, which he cannot remember writing, coming to life. I submit for the approval of the Midnight Society, Alan Wake.
Alan Wake's picking up scattered pages in the woods.
I collected all of those pages.
That is so fucking impressive because I didn't come anywhere close.
I didn't find them on my own. I did my first playthrough. And there are these manuscript pages that are just hidden throughout the forest, this town, which I already forgot the name of. I said it in the description.
Bright Falls.
Thank you. All these manuscript pages are scattered around Bright Falls, and they're pages that he wrote.
They're also scattered across difficulties, I believe.
Yes, they are.
So you had to play on the highest difficulty to get all of them.
Yeah, which I did because I loved the hell out of this game. I played this game probably all the way through three times, which is sad because it's sad because I can't remember a whole lot about it. I'm sure as we start talking about it, my memory will be jogged, but I feel like I played a game like three times and I played this game like I played it, finished it, and then played it, finished it on different difficulties. And it's like there was no game in between it or anything. But yeah, I collected all of those silly manuscript pages, and I had to look some of them up.
Was it necessary to really understand the story? Because I feel like my playthrough had a little gaps in it for me to understand exactly what was going on.
It was necessary for me to unlock an achievement, but no, okay. It didn't help me bridge the gaps. I mean, the manuscript pages themselves do, but I think like if you collect most of them, you get the gist of it.
Okay. Because, Nicole, I wanted you to play this because we were thinking about games for you to play. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I think you would like this. Mm-hmm. So what were your impressions of playing through Alan Wake?
I really, really enjoyed it.
I'm very happy I didn't waste your time.
It was really,
like I've done with a few other games.
It was really, really good. It was hard for me. And first-person point of view in general is hard for me. Mm-hmm. But
what did you like about it?
I loved the setting, the atmosphere. And I liked, like, I think that's probably the first, like, horror game I guess I've played, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because you love A, Twin Peaks.
Yes.
And B, Stephen King.
Yes.
And then like whenever I heard about this game, that's what sold me on it, because they said those were the primary influences behind this game.
Yeah, those might as well be bullet points on the on the game box.
I bought a 360 for this game. I was so pumped about it. I did thoroughly enjoy it, but I was a little disappointed in some respects.
What do you mean you bought a whole console for it?
Yeah.
It's got a lot to live up to.
But one thing, like, all right, let's hit combat. Because combat is completely based on light and dark.
Mm.
Because all the enemies are cloaked in darkness. And in order to defeat them, you have to shine your flashlight to chase away the darkness, and then they're vulnerable to gunfire.
Which sounds really goofy. When you explain it on a podcast, that sounds really, really like Luigi's, like the Haunted Mansion. But it's not in Alan Wake. It's actually really, they do a really good job of making that incredibly tense.
Yeah.
Because light is a rarity, you know, because of course, I mean, well, when the sun is up, but when the sun goes down, like the setting completely changes.
Right.
Light, any shred of light is the only sanctuary you have in this whole game.
Yeah. And that's one of my favorite things in this game is the use of light. And most memorable to me, besides using your flashlight to kind of shred the shadows off of your enemies, would be the street lights.
Mm-hmm.
Because, man, they pull this trick like several times in the game where you'll be running through like a national park or something and it's completely dark and you have guys just engulfed in shadow chasing you axes and knives. And you'll see in front of you, you'll see like way in the distance, you'll see just this light, this one light, and it's flickering. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's just such a good job. They do such a good job because the impulse is, I got to hurry up and get to that light because not only am I being chased by these guys, but that light's flickering. And I have no idea how long it's going to stay on. And I really, really need that light to stay on so they can't hurt me.
Mm-hmm. So like there, one thing I think this game does like brilliantly is so when they introduce new enemies, introduce new elements, it's always fascinating because you'll see, so you'll fight like a fireman.
Mm-hmm.
He's been taken over by the darkness that's coming out of, I guess, the lake.
Yeah, I think we can get to this there, with the story.
It's, yeah. I'm not sure where to enter Alan Wake.
Yeah, the story's kind of weird. It starts with him and his wife going to this town, mm-hmm. and they're on a boat. Because
he's a best-selling author.
Right, he is Stephen King.
Yeah,
Alan Wake is Stephen King.
Right, he hasn't done a novel in a while.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they get a cabin that's on a lake, and then that's when things get really fuzzy as far as like how reality is working. Mm-hmm. Because he wakes up, his wife is missing. Is that right?
Yeah.
Am I doing it right? And he finds a manuscript page that I think just says exactly what he's experiencing right now.
Yeah.
And then he starts trying to find out what happened to his wife, and all this weird stuff starts happening. George Costanza is in the game. He's my favorite character. I can't remember the name of his manager.
Barry.
Mm-hmm. Loved Barry. The game needed Barry. If this was a movie, Barry would be cast, or Jason Alexander would be cast as Barry. I guarantee it.
Yeah, because first you get into the town, you go to like a diner, and the diner isn't it like a diner from Twin Peaks? Like they're wearing the waitress has on the same uniform mm-hmm. as the diner in there.
And has a jukebox. Like whenever I played it and we went into the diner, like it was like almost just ripped from Twin Peaks. It looked exactly the same. Yeah. Like the setup and everything with the middle part and the tables on the outside and the jukebox and the waitress uniform. And yeah.
Because then there are some important NPCs in there when you first go in. Of course, the waitress and the two old men that are there arguing about the jukebox and the music.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back to the back, you're supposed to get the key to the cabin. But it turns out someone cloaked in darkness wouldn't come out into the regular light of the diner and gives you the key to the cabin. But then you find out it's the wrong person that gave you the wrong key. So you go, that's when you go to the cabin, shit goes wrong. And then it becomes, Alan passes out, and when he wakes up, the cabin's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So he wakes up and he doesn't know what's going on. He's trying to figure out, he's in the dark trying to get back, and then that's when, you know, shit falls apart. Because it is a horror game. It's not too actiony, but I feel like the combat was pretty clunky, I think, in a lot of regards. I don't know if it was sort of supposed to be. Like Alan, because Alan's not like a warrior or anything like that. He's not a marksman, he's a rider.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how to balance a gun and a flashlight and a flare gun. Like he's probably supposed to not be great. So I don't know if it's intentionally clunky, so it's a little more stressful, a little more tense, or if it's just like just not the best combat it could be.
Yeah, I think it's because it wasn't the main focus of the game, right? I mean, I don't think that's a good question, but I can't imagine they would design it specifically to be. I mean, I feel like there'd be some kind of indicator, like instead of it just being clunky, maybe like Alan Wake's on the screen fumbles around with his flashlight or something to give you some kind of indication that we're doing this on purpose. Don't we know? We know what we're doing. But yeah, I also agree that the combat, it's better to avoid combat by far. And it's better to, I would rarely shoot any of the people who are infected with the shadow. I just shine a flashlight on them to try to stun them for a little bit or at least stop them. Because usually when you shine a light on them, they would stop for like a second. Mm-hmm. And then I would use that opportunity to try to run away.
Because you get like a message from somebody that he's kidnapped your wife and you're trying to find whoever this guy is who's calling you on the phone and telling you like, I've got your wife. Mm-hmm. Someone told me to do this. You need to come here and here with this. Get those pages. Bring those to me. Don't read those. I want all those pages now. So then you're having to try to get back to town, try to hunt down this guy because you're wondering what happened to your wife. And like the first, I think like forest rangers, the first enemies that you fight. So they've been taken over by the dark, by this evil presence that's in the town. And what I really like is they still mutter things that they would say yeah. in life that are in just a creepy tone of voice. But at the same time, what I don't like is one of Alan Wake's, I think, biggest flaws is the enemies just, they repeat a lot. You'll fight the same four enemies throughout the whole game. Four enemies and then animated farm equipment.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. Like, I feel like if they had really varied things up more, it would have been great. And there's a lot of just random generators hidden in the woods that are attached to streetlights.
Yeah.
The first few times, but I would have liked to have had it, like, tried a little more ingenuity on how to get light or try to find a light or create a light as opposed to just try to find a generator and then quickly tap A to start it and you get your save point.
Yeah, I like it. It does kind of take you, or at least took me out of it a little bit when you find a random generator, because it's like there's no point to have a generator out in the middle of the woods to power one streetlight. By the way, why is there a streetlight in the middle of the woods? So, I mean, I agree that it like kind of took me out a little bit, but at the same time, things are kind of messed up in this world. So it's like I could forgive it a little bit because I'd be like, okay, well, this is, you know, this could be some kind of like manifestation, a psychological manifestation or something like that. Also, man, those are my favorite moments in the game when you're trying to power up those generators because they use it so well to emphasize the danger because it never fails. You're trying to power that generator up to activate the light so you can have sanctuary. And it's like, as you're doing it, you see these shadow people like mm-hmm. coming at you. And it's like, oh, please, come on. Start up.
The music does a good tense job of hitting yeah. like a hard note as they start to come up, or the camera will like pan around so you can see one of them.
Yeah.
But you know there are more.
Yeah, because you hear them. That. Yeah. They're muttering things like, only you can prevent forest fires and stuff like that.
I really felt like the generators were not that random because the streetlights were in the part where they were in like a national park where there would be a trail where people would be walking. Mm-hmm. And then other ones were like at like mills or construction sites or things like that. And since they're out in the woods, they would need the generator since they don't have electricity.
Like, I understand that, but I just don't... I've never seen a...
generators.
To be honest, like, I have not been to many national parks, but it was just weird for me to see a streetlight in a national park. Like, maybe if it was, like, I don't know, some kind of, like, pathway light or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's just, like, a straight-up, like, New York City-style streetlight.
And I love the, like, I feel like maybe, like, lanterns on picnic tables or something like that would have been
a little more
appropriate. But I also love the use of flares.
Yeah, the flares are really cool because it's essentially an item that you can use. It's a weapon mm-hmm. That allows you to throw it and it lights up and that gives you a little bit of space to
breathe. Yeah, because when you're getting swarmed, you need that. It doesn't really destroy anybody, but the enemies won't pass the perimeter of the light and it'll take the shadow off of them. The strongest weapon in the game is probably the flare gun.
Yeah.
Because it basically destroys anything you shoot with it and has the big burst to chase things off.
Man, I'm glad you mentioned that farm equipment because I forgot about it. There is a lot of the animated mm-hmm. Objects in this game, I think, were my biggest stumbling block, like trying to finish it. Because I remember distinctly the first, there's a part in the game where you're going over a bridge. And all of a sudden, everything on the bridge like starts flying at you. Mm-hmm. And I think it might be like the first time you kind of experience the animated possessed objects. I remember dying so many times mm-hmm. on that bridge because I did not know how to deal with that situation. I didn't know if I was supposed to try to shine my flashlight on these things or if I was just supposed to try to dodge them. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I figured it out. And once I kind of felt like once I figured it out, when I saw that kind of stuff again in the future, it didn't have as much impact.
Mm-hmm. And they repeated a lot.
Yeah.
Because if they had just done these tricks a few times and then kept inventing, but they just used the same few pages of that playbook throughout the course of the game.
Man, it kind of sucks because, like, we're talking about this game that I really, really liked.
Because the story...
But it sounds like really super negative.
I guess we're hitting the negative first.
I don't really agree with what you're saying.
Okay. Well, please.
Speak up.
No, I mean, I feel like well, yeah, mountain men and park rangers are who are going to be in this community, and farming and logging equipment is what's going to be in this setting. So, I mean, I think they used what was appropriate for the setting.
I think that's a fair statement. Mm-hmm. But I think, and I guess then my big complaint maybe wouldn't be the setting, because I thought the setting was like great for ambiance. And I mean, they really do a good job of like, what's super interesting is you're in this wide open space, right? But you feel super isolated. They do such a good job of making you feel isolated just through the use of light and dark. That's super interesting to me. It's probably my favorite thing about the game, is just how it felt. It felt right. But I guess, I don't know. I see what you're saying, but I still, like, it's weird, because it's weird to look at it, because, like, from a very, like, game standpoint, like, it feels like palette swaps and stuff like that, like, mm-hmm. using the same kind of thing. But, I mean, you're right. It does make sense within mm-hmm. the setting. So, I don't know.
Maybe I just would have liked to have seen the darkness have different effects on people. Like, it just manifested more than them kind of muttering and throwing axes at you or shooting you. It just having, like, just more than just the darkness taking somebody over and charging at you or just throwing something. Just vary it up. Still use the logger. Still use that. Just have the darkness manifest differently.
Sometimes it makes people juggle.
Yeah.
Uncontrollably.
But I guess now we can hit into, like, spoilers territory, because we'll start talking more about the story.
I'm fine with that.
So spoilers. Yeah. Spoilers.
If you haven't played the game, stop now.
Mm-hmm.
And then re-download the show later, because we could definitely use all the downloads we can get.
Because, oh, okay, well, okay, let me hit collectibles now that I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Because you collect the pages for the manuscript and coffee thermoses.
Right.
How'd you guys feel about collecting coffee thermoses?
I love it.
You liked it?
I did. I really liked it.
Yeah.
What'd you like about it?
I thought that it was an appropriate use of, like, almost humor to kind of lighten the mood every once in a while. Because, you know, it's so, like, you know, tense.
Yeah.
And so suspenseful, and then all of a sudden you're like, ooh, coffee thermos.
Yeah, it is like a little bit of relief.
Yeah.
And it's he does say, he like quips something, I think, like the first time you find it, which lightens the mood. He likes coffee a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it makes sense. I think it's because I have played a lot of games that have a lot of collectible stuff in it. I collected all these thermoses. But... man, I'm just so tired. I'm just so tired of collecting stuff in games. But what I really liked is how they handled it in Batman with, like, all the Riddler collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that, because each one was like a puzzle that you had to figure out. But it felt like in Alan Wake, I just kind of had to find them. I had to be in the right place. You know, I had to either know where they were in advance or kind of stumble upon them. But it was always nice when I found one. You mm-hmm. get this, like, little burst of endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thermos. You're right.
It is rewarding. My only complaint is, like, I'm down for collectibles. I just like them to have more tangible in-game benefit than an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Because really there's not much of a reason besides the achievement to collect all these.
Well, they show up in your inventory, so that's super important. When you can look at all your thermoses.
Like, if there was like a...
I didn't collect them all to get an achievement or anything, but I still enjoyed collecting mm-hmm. them. So
I would have liked just like a Starbucks vendor in town that I could trade in my coffee thermoses to.
And they give you a fishing pole.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And you take the fishing pole to the lake, and then you fish your wife up.
I can fish that, like, or batteries for my flashlight.
I think it's interesting, Nicole. I think you may like collecting the thermoses because you didn't feel compelled to collect all of them. See, whenever I see a collectible in the game, it's like, oh, great, I have to collect all of these. And it's like to a point where it's just like this negative feeling inside of me where it's like, I might as well just turn this fucking game off, because I know I'm going to be compelled to, like, find all of them.
I felt like I let it happen more organically, and then it would make me laugh when they were, like, in odd, unexpected places. So,
because I get the worst. Alan Wake is not the worst to do this. I feel like the worst is, like, Far Cry 3, the artifacts in the game.
Oh, yeah. Because there's so many of them.
And there's not even an achievement for getting them. There's no reason to collect all the artifacts. But, like, people will be compelled to do it just because. Like, maybe it's the message that the designers are trying to do. Like, hey, this is senseless. You shouldn't mm-hmm. do this. We're not going to even give you anything mm-hmm. for it.
I did it.
So, you got all of them?
Got all of them. I finished all the side missions. I drained that game dry. But to be honest, I really enjoyed the game, but I didn't enjoy collecting all those artifacts. But mm-hmm. I did it. So knock that 40 to 50 hours off my life.
So, and spoilers. So in Alan Wake, so basically there is now... The entity that lives under the lake mm-hmm. is now taken on Alan's persona as like another Alan, and he is
Nega Alan,
which has happened before. Like, he needs artists to write, and because he can like bestow some kind of power onto an artist that whatever they create then comes true. So like the first person to come to the lake was Thomas Zane, mm-hmm. and Thomas Zane was a poet. So he took over Thomas Zane, had like a duplicate Zane, and then had Zane write poetry to remake the world in the way that the darkness wanted it to be. But Zane ended up catching on and, like, I think killed himself to stop it. And then the darkness had to retreat back until Alan came into town. And the darkness sees, oh, another creator, and then takes hold and forces some version of Alan to continually write. And he kidnaps his wife to try to make him keep writing. And then... So there's the other Alan who is finding the pages that the other Alan is writing that is being forced by the dark Alan.
You're Alan. The Alan you're Alan. Playing. Right.
So then, yeah, you're trying to collect the manuscript pages so you know where to go next to where you're telling yourself to go.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you have to figure out a way to write your own loophole into the story to stop the darkness, but it's in control of everything until you do, which it's layered and kind of confusing, but... I think the fiction is really good.
Yeah, I think so too. I thought it was really cool. Like, I was compelled to play the game to see where the story went.
I loved finding the television sets in the game that had the Twilight Zone ripoff,
uh-huh.
where you'd watch the full episodes that were they weren't even animated. They were like acted out.
And I watched all of them and loved all of them. I mean, they were so well done. That I would get, I guess the feeling that you had when you saw the coffee thermos, whenever I saw a TV, man, I was super excited because I would be like, I get to set the controller down for like just a little bit and totally be entertained.
Mm-hmm. And that's when the other Alan will taunt you as well.
Yeah.
Which was fun to see. It was really well voice acted, like really well.
Yeah. Yeah, the game really is well voice acted. You're right. We haven't talked about the rockers yet.
Oh, yeah. The old gods of Asgard?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They had my favorite scene in the game was with them toward the end.
Yeah. They are metal musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And why do they live there? I don't know why they live there. But they had been there for a long time because
they were institutionalized there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you run across them in the psychiatric retreat. And they were also the ones in the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in this elaborate part of the game, you go to their house, mm-hmm. and there is a stage outside their house.
Mm-hmm.
And
a big farm just with a huge stage out in the backyard.
It just seems completely random. And then what happens?
Because you have to figure out, you have to get power going to it,
mm-hmm.
and... You have to get them on stage because, like, they were also at one point taken over by the darkness.
Right.
So, like, their music and things have clues about what you need, how you can defeat the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't completely take them over. It just drove them crazy. So you're trying to find their old albums. Then you figure out you need to get them on stage to sing again. So once you get – you turn on the stage, get their records – lure a ton of darkness into the area.
Swarmed by them.
And then you turn on all their pyrotechnics and all their music. And, yeah, favorite scene of the game is when the concert just goes crazy and you just start seeing a whole field of all the darkness just evaporated and exploding. And then you're in the middle still shooting with your flashlight and your shotgun.
Yeah.
It's
tense.
It's a good action-y, tense moment for a horror game. Mm-hmm. It feels like a climax as opposed to being something that's out of place.
That's a good way of putting it. And nothing in this game I felt easy. Like, even when it was, like, even when something is pretty easy to pull off, it never, ever feels easy. Even on, like, the lowest difficulty setting, I didn't think this game felt easy at all, which is really, like, a cool little trick.
I got to see Nicole rage out a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot of problems with it, but...
What problems did you have with it?
It was really hard. It was hard.
Like controlling or...
Yeah, I mean, either I died a lot.
dodging was always like it was a hard mechanic to pick up. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was essential to survival.
Yeah,
but really hard to pick up.
Yeah, I liked the dodge mechanic a lot because I felt like it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Because like if you don't dodge something, it is pretty much fatal. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. it's not like a one hit kind of kill situation, but like kind of might as well be. Cause a lot of times I'd find like if I got hit, I was going to get hit again. Mm-hmm. Or if I got, cause you'll be staggered. And it's really rare that there's one of these shadowy people is going to be around you. You're probably going to have like two or three. Mm-hmm. So like if you get hit and you stagger, someone like another one is up on you like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can see if you have difficulty picking up dodging, you probably would die a lot.
Because I was worried about your and Josh's marriage while we played this game because you...
I think you say that about every game we play.
Josh likes to tell, he wants to help you.
Mm-hmm. No, but okay. Well, he may like to help me, but the way in which he does it is not helpful.
Did you hear that, Josh? He's not helpful.
Because I'll be like in the middle of some stressful situation where I'm about to die, and he'd be like, why don't you just do this?
I can relate a little bit if this makes you feel any better. When Nikki is playing like an RPG, I never want to tell her what to do. I'm kind of like anti-Josh. I want her to like figure it out. And I figure that if she wants help, she will ask me for help. But she will never ask me for help is a problem. And to the point where she's just like, I'm looking over and she's just like, I don't like this game. I don't know what to do. I'm like, do you want me to tell you what to do? Yes. Okay. Just ask me. Yeah, you can ask me and I will help you. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable.
Because there would be like, Josh would say that. You would get frustrated, set the controller down, then neither of them would look at each other for a while. So then I would try to be unobtrusive, pick up the controller, get through this next session, pause it, and set the controller back down by Nicole. So knowing, like, once the rage subsided, uh-huh. you would pick it back up and finish the rest of the mission.
Did you finish the game?
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Did you like how it ended?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like it was appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really liked how it ended because mm-hmm. It was like super, super surreal. Like it mm-hmm. goes off the cliff mm-hmm. at yeah. the end because it was just like, it's almost like Stanley Parable-esque at the end because it gets really meta and like all these random objects are just thrown in front of you and you're shining your flashlight on them.
At words that yeah. then turn into objects.
Oh, and, it's yeah. super surreal.
Like and when you find the thermos one
yeah.
in the middle of the, go back to the back, thermos, coffee thermos. That's like the last one you get.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah, they are the words, like the word thermos. You shine your light on the word and it transforms into mm-hmm. the thermos, right? Yeah, that's cool. Man. I won't lie to you. The first time I played the game, I did not know what the hell was going on. I really, really did not. It took me the second playthrough to mm-hmm. like finally like piece things together about exactly what was going on with Thomas Zane and the whole like Nega Alan Wake and all that. Like the whole time my first playthrough, I just thought like Alan had amnesia or something like that. Like he had done all these yeah. things or like he was like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of scenario where during the day he was doing all these things and then we get to play him at night and fix everything he fucked up in the day.
Because one thing, because you played a lot of the original DLC, Dave, then I played the American Nightmare sequel,
mm-hmm.
which one thing I do like is the Nega Alan Wake, they call him Mr. Scratch in the sequel because he's a bigger character in the sequel. But and only if you turn on the subtitles do you see Mr. Scratch. When they actually talk about him in game, the Scratch is like a censor because they won't say whatever his name is for some reason. Like they keep him unnamed. It'll just Mr. and then you'll hear like feedback noise
uh-huh.
from like a microphone. But in American Nightmare, that is it because the way Alan Wake ends, you going into the lake, right, to try to you have to descend into the darkness.
Right.
You save your wife. You pull her back up. But then go further into the lake, into the darkness. And what American Nightmare fleshes out is now you're in all the worlds that all these creators have made. And you're having to go through world by world by world, extinguishing the darkness, hoping you'll eventually get back to the real world. So Alan is then in American Nightmare. He is, now he is, it sort of, I guess, makes sense because now he's calling himself the champion of light, and Mr. Scratch is the champion of Mr. Scratch. Mr. Scratch, he's just all bad. Mr. Scratch is the champion of darkness, so you're competing against him, and he's generally stronger than you are, but you have to overcome him anyway. And you go into another world, another town with another set of problems, and you go through the town. Really, Alan Wake American Nightmare is the same three stories three different times, because you have to finish the story to know what happened in the story, and then you go through and change it periodically. And then you learn how Alan, now he's the champion of light, he knows how to manipulate his writing. So then you have to figure out these weird little things to do, like you have to save a woman who's trying to help you. In the first two versions, she dies. Then you figure out, you find like a manuscript page, and you have to dissect the paragraph.
Uh-huh.
It says like, when the radio was playing at 12 till 6, everyone was dancing to Elvis Costello. And so you have to go and find a radio, like a CD player, go plug it up. You have to put in an Elvis Costello CD and play it at like that exact point in time.
Uh-huh.
And then with that, Alan can basically then write in something to happen.
So you're source coding it. Have you seen that movie?
No.
That's essentially, it sounds like the plot of Source Code, where it's like he's caught in Groundhog Day, and he's trying to save a woman on a train, and he essentially has to like figure out how to do it. And I don't know how it ends in Alan Wake or American Nightmare. I'm not going to spoil Source Code. I definitely recommend watching it, especially having played this game, because I want to see your side by side comparison.
I can do that. But then you figure out, that's how you figure out how to basically call down a meteor to smash the darkness before it can come out kill everybody.
That does not happen in Source Code.
I want to know, as a non-music person, if you knew who Elvis Costello was.
Only because of his appearances on Saturday Night Live and various sitcoms. Otherwise, I would not know who he was.
That makes me sad a little bit. But I don't fault you for it. I don't.
I didn't grow up with it. The combat in American Nightmare is super tight. Super tight. Like, they really, like, they refined it so much that it feels like an action game, but doesn't feel like a horror game.
That's what I was going to ask, because it, like, didn't sound much like a horror game.
No, it's super, super action-y. And I hate that. It seems like that always happens to horror games.
Mm-hmm.
The longer a horror game, the original installment is great. Every installment after that is just getting further and further away from the formula. Yeah. It always becomes more action-y and not scary.
Resident Evil did it. Dead Space did it. I think those are my two, like, that make me the saddest, because I love the first Resident Evil. I did not like the second one, because even like the second one was too action-y for me.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Dead Space. Loved the first Dead Space, but I didn't even finish the second one.
Yeah.
Because it just didn't feel as... I feel like both Resident Evil, Dead Space, and Alan Wake, like, those games really nailed the pacing. And it's not, I mean, there are fast moments in this game and all these games, but they're like punctuated. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like there's a long span of slow building, and then all of a sudden, within a short span of time, there's a whole lot of craziness going on that you need to get through. And then it's followed by another long span of building action.
I feel like Dead Space is the worst offender on that list. Because Resident Evil was really bad, but Dead Space 3 was co-op.
I didn't even play 3, yeah.
That absolutely, like, you cannot get that same horror experience with another person. It's just different. So, like, it completely goes off the rails from its original iteration. But Alan Wake.
I played the first DLC. I think it's called The Signal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also was not as horror as the original game. I could tell that, I mean, there are a lot more combat scenarios. I didn't notice the actual mechanics change, like any of the controls or anything like that, but I did find myself fighting a lot more of the shadow.
Mm-hmm. I guess one thing I did that was, it wasn't so much scary, but it was sad in American Nightmare, in that Alan could still hear things from the real world. So any radio you would find, you could tune in and hear like the radio station from the original Alan Wake. And it would be that radio host interviewing Barry or the old gods. And they would talk about how Alan's been missing for 3 years now. They're still trying to find him. His wife she's now a movie director. So she's coming out with movies that she's doing. And
well,
she's,
that's a radical change
huh? Yeah, she's trying to find, she's still trying to find him. She won't move on. She's not going to remarry.
She will direct the fuck out of some movies, though.
Yeah, because that's one thing you have to do to get out of the end. You use the light from a movie movie projector playing her movie to trap Mr. Scratch at one point, and that's how.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. I like the idea of the projector. Yeah. I do think it's really weird. She's a movie director. Yeah. do they talk about her occupation in the first game?
I don't remember. If they do, it's just briefly at the beginning.
I think I would have remembered movie director.
Alan, you're a writer. I know, Alice, and you are a movie director. Nothing else.
I sure am enjoying this exposition, as am I.
Overall, I feel like Alan Wake is a good experience. Especially, it's a good entry into horror. It's not like it's not horror that's too much for a lot of people, because I feel like Resident Evil 1 is almost too much for some people.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they do. Resident Evil plays a little bit more on gore.
Yeah.
Because there's like not a whole lot of gore at all that I recall in Alan Wake.
Because the bodies disappear whenever you shoot them. Expel the darkness, shoot the body, and it just fizzles away.
Which makes sense. Like, it's not like super unbelievable that they disappear just because they've been cloaked in shadow for a long time. And just kind of, I like that.
I do want to just talk about Twin Peaks.
Yes, okay. Please.
I know I don't want to talk about Twin Peaks because you guys haven't seen it.
I haven't seen all of it.
Yeah.
I've got like 6 more episodes
left. But just, you know, I really enjoyed the log lady parallel with like the lady that...
The lady in the light.
And she's like, you know, she's like this quirky, weird person that you think is kind of crazy, but it turns out she really knows some shit. I really love that.
I didn't even make that connection. Yeah, that's...
Explain.
The Lady of the Light is basically, she's an old woman who, I forget why it came down to her, why she was the last one of this, some kind of like club that was fighting against the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So she has taken like the dam, the city's dam, and decorated it all in Christmas lights and other lights and flashlights. Like, and she's constantly, like her vigil is to make sure the light is always on.
Uh-huh.
And she has to make sure this one room always has a light on it. She can't even explain why, but she has to make sure this is always, there's always light and it's always on. So basically all she does is like she's wrapped in like...
You meet her at the beginning in the diner.
Yeah, she's in the diner.
She's kind of dressed like Rat King, right? She kind of reminded me of Rat King. Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
The weird homeless lady. Like when you find her again, she's wrapped in Christmas lights and
when
like that.
When she goes into the walk-in clinic, they definitely ask her if she lives in a house.
Might live in the dam.
That's what we thought. We've heard of you.
Because the climax of the story is she's protecting the item that Alan needs to overcome the darkness, which is a light switch.
And what is the parallel to Twin Peaks?
In Twin Peaks, there's the log lady, and she has a log that she carries around, and everyone thinks she's crazy, obviously. She talks to the log. She tells people to talk to her log or whatever. Anyway, it turns out that she has critical information to find out to figure out their investigation. I don't want to ruin Twin Peaks for anybody.
Okay. Like the log, because the logs, it wasn't her that witnessed it. It was the log.
Yeah, because she goes, my log knows something. You ask my log. Like, you have to love Twin Peaks quirkiness to appreciate it, but...
Do you like all of... Who was directed that again? Twin Peaks?
David Lynch.
David Lynch. So you're a big fan of all his other stuff, or is it mostly just Twin Peaks?
I'm not familiar with much other stuff. Yeah. I love his creative mind, I guess.
Because I've read things about like he's one of the most eccentric directors out there.
Well, like whenever I first started listening to Welcome to Night Vale, like the description, like one of the reviews or something was like, this is a daily newscast written by Stephen King and told by David Lynch. And I was like, perfect.
I meant to mention this when we talked about Link's Awakening, because you were on that episode. Mm-hmm. The creators mentioned that they were directly influenced by Twin Peaks. They wanted that feeling. And they specifically say, like, in Link's Awakening, you know how you, like, run across all the town people? And they wanted to give the feeling that all the townspeople were suspicious. Like, none of them kind of really... Mm-hmm. They didn't want you to, like, trust any of them. Mm-hmm. And they wanted it because they felt like that was really nice for that, like, dream kind of atmosphere. So I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. I meant to bring it up because I know you're a huge Twin Peaks fan, but I completely forgot to. So here I am like a month later.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
If anybody out there has not watched Twin Peaks, I cannot recommend it enough. But I know that like Tyler's tried to watch it, and Tyler's way of watching something is to watch it and do something else at the same time.
Yeah, I know that bothers you.
I know. Yeah. It doesn't normally bother me, but I feel like with Twin Peaks,
it's sacred.
If you're not paying attention,
you miss stuff, right?
Yeah, you don't catch all the little stuff that makes it so great.
And I don't say that because I've seen all Twin Peaks. I haven't, but it's just one of those things where it's like, one of my favorite movies is Shaun of the Dead. And I think Shaun of the Dead is a hilarious movie. But I think what's more funny than the jokes in Shaun of the Dead is all like the little things that you don't catch if you're not watching it. So whenever I watch that movie with somebody, I just get, it just irritates, it gets under my skin because it's like, this movie is a brilliant movie. And if you would focus on it and watch, you would catch all this brilliant stuff that's happening. So I understand that.
This game has achievements.
Yeah.
So they're pretty good for the most part. I feel like there wasn't anything that I would ask more for the achievements. So I don't have any.
No, I don't have any either. It's got achievements. We don't need it.
Yeah. So what do you want to do? Do you want to do? Do we want to wrap up Alan Wake? Do we have people to talk to?
Some people called us. I don't want to talk to them, though. Okay. I got to go.
Okay.
I got to cut this short. Tyler.
Yes, Dave.
We've been talking about Alan Wake. Okay. I'm trying to guess what you're going to say here. Mm-hmm. If you were to give this game a kind of beard that just summed up how you feel about it, what kind of beard would it be?
Like a man who is half standing in the shadow and in light, so there's like shadows on half of his face.
Okay.
So it's a shadow beard.
A shadow beard. I thought you might go with like a shadowy lumberjack beard, but I'm glad that you went with a shadow beard because that's the only kind of beard I can grow. This shadow beard. Even when I grow my little, I don't know what you would call it, my Van Dyke that comes in like kind of looks like a alley cat that you'd take into the vet because you feel bad for it. Even when I grow that, I don't think that's as good as a shadow beard. My shadow beards, they turn out a lot nicer than that. If you were to give this game a pair of glasses that summed up how you felt about it, what kind of glasses would you give it?
This is probably my biggest stretch for glasses.
Awesome. Because you have given H. John Benjamin as glasses.
It's completely pitch black outside. Can't see your hands in front of your face. But when a car starts, the pair of glasses I give this are headlights in the dark.
Yeah, that's a stretch. Okay.
They look like eyes and they're still headlights. They look like glass.
They're like car glasses.
Car glasses.
They're car glasses.
If I can give windshields, multiple windshields,
yeah, this works. I'll give car glasses.
Headlights in a pitch black forest.
Now, your brother, he spent all that money on clear back car glasses.
That ignorant ass. That's all I got to say about Alan Wake.
I say play it. Yeah. That's my final word on it. Play it.
I have a word of warning. I could not look at farm equipment and machinery the same way for a long time.
Really?
Like every time we'd drive down the road and I'd see a tractor or something, I would like have the instinct that I needed to
shine do something. Yeah.
So that is a disclaimer.
So this game did it. I mean, it worked on you then.
Oh yeah.
And also you can't, I mean, you get scared of a shadowy man holding an axe too.
Oh yeah. Of course.
Before this game, you were fine.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for one, playing this game and then coming on to talk. Because now you and Josh Nance are officially tied up.
Oh, number of episodes number that guest of episodes hosted?
Are we tied or am I ahead? Because I thought the last one tied.
I thought you were ahead too.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I think the last one did tie. So this does pull you ahead by one.
You hear that?
But if I comment, that means I'm a guest host on this.
No, this is a cameo. This is a Josh cameo.
I even offered. I was like, who wants to be fourth man? No one said anything. It's like, all right, Nicole's now ahead.
I like the look on Josh's face right now.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys. I enjoyed it. And I feel like I could talk about this game a lot more, but I enjoyed it.
You can.
No.
Part two. Let's do a part two.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can find us on iTunes, on the Stitcher, on our website.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, Wednesday, we'll be talking about Super Punch-Out.
You okay?
Oh, I'm so excited.
And you know what? I realized as we were recording this, this isn't the episode that all the DragonCon people are going to hear.
I was wondering if you had that. I was like, well, I guess they already have one for this coming week, so I'll just want
no,
something.
No, we don't. So all that pressure was for no reason. That's good. We needed a
good,
practice.
Good. I need a funnier intro story than making bubblegum martinis.
That's hilarious. You were a little pink. You were a little pink
dog. You need to link to your picture of you in all pink.
Yeah, me behind the bar with... Yeah.
Do you have a photograph?
I do.
Because this is like, we don't, I feel like we never have a photograph of you in the show notes. You never deliver on that.
Yeah.
We were supposed to get corduroy
suit. I'll
be
editing it like 2 a.m. and it's like, oh, I don't want to find this fucking picture. Let's just put it up.
I don't want to find this picture. We'll just do 9 NSFW links. Let's face it, they're better than a photo of you in a corduroy suit. So you're welcome, listeners.
Everybody would rather see Bailey J than me in a corduroy suit.
Bailey J in a corduroy suit. How about that? Blend the two worlds together.
I will see if I can find it. Kyle looked up. Kyle's been playing Pokemon the whole time. I say Bailey J, and I see Kyle's head poke over the ottoman. Now it's slowly descending back, not to look up again.
Kyle, you're like the Bailey J meerkat.
But while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. It helps us so much. I guess we should thank, I think the last person to leave us a 5-star review was Gus the Polar Bear. So thank you, Gus the Polar Bear.
Yes. And we had another one. There's been two.
Oh.
I don't have iTunes pulled up in front of me, so I'll have to thank him later. Mm-hmm. But I loved the Home Alone deep cut that is the title of his review. And it is, I'll have to feed you to my tarantula.
And so if you want us to thank you, we totally will. Leave us a 5-star review, and we will thank you eventually.
Eventually.
But you write us a review. It helps us out. We appreciate it. Further incentive, if you leave a game that you want us to play, if there's a game you want us to play, put it in your review.
Mm-hmm.
And we will get to that eventually.
Don't worry, guys. Like Tyler said, we're going to be back. We're going to be talking about punching guys. I have spent very little time with Super Punch-Out. I played a lot of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to compare which one's more racist. It's probably the NES version, just going to say. But we'll see. We'll see. In the meantime, you can always find us on tadpog.com. That's where the show notes live. That's where Bailey J makes all kinds of appearances. Mm-hmm. Not that she's affiliated with the show at all. We really wish that she was.
Yes.
But we just like to link to her material. Just because. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
You can also find us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com. There are a lot of cool people there, Tyler, and they're doing a lot of cool mm-hmm. shit. Usually people will comment on the show. Whenever we publish a show, we'll post it in Facebook, and people can say stuff about it. I like that. You can also find us on Twitter. We are at tadpog_podcast. It is cumbersome, I realize, but... the good thing about it is you can talk to me while I'm on the toilet. I mean, if you want to do that, find us on Twitter and send us a message. And more than likely, I'll just favorite it. More than likely, that's all I'll do. But every now and then, I'll say something back. That's when you can tell that I'm on the toilet. So there you go. I'm in the horrible, horrible, worst toilet in Paducah, Kentucky at work where the brown stuff oozes out from the tile and you step on it like a D&D monster.
The invulnerable antibiotics disease that's under the toilet.
Actually, that should have been when the doctor asked me if I lived in a house. I should have been like, I do live in a house, but let me tell you about where I shit. You can call us if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Tadpog Hotline. Eventually, I would like to play your calls. You can reach us at 270-883-2555. Leave us a message. Keep it under 3 minutes. And we like questions. Mm-hmm. So feel free to ask us a question because then we get to interact with you. And we really like that. And if you want to make it video game related, that's even better.
Nicole, our theme song. Do you know what it is?
No, I've suddenly forgotten.
That's okay. That's okay.
No, it's fine. It's Moves by Sycamore Drive.
And a track to that, where can that be found?
A link to that track.
Yeah.
Can be found in the show notes at tadpog.com.
She even corrected me. That's how good you got this. So until next time,
Tropical Capricorn.
I'm surprised you didn't say anything, Josh.
Yeah, Josh.
Couple cut.
I like you guys.
Couple cut? Just your copper pot?
Oswald copper pot.
Oswald copper pot.
I feel like when you guys say tropical Capricorn, you kind of lost like the like, because whenever it was Brandon, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was first on, he was all like, tropical Capricorn. Tropical, you guys are just like, tropical Capricorn.
Or John, tropico Capricorn. Uh-huh.
I know, I love that. I don't ever want to correct him.
I think you might have missed sex, dude.
Yeah, I know.
No.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
By the time she got home and like showered and sat down, I think.
And sat down. sit in the sex chair. This is where I'll. I guess I'll just sit in the sex chair until my husband comes home.
Because once I get up and move to the sex chair, there's no going back. Go home, shower, get a little bite to eat, sit in the sex chair.
Can't get out of the sex chair. You're good.
Loud gay fetish porn. I feel like that's